Hello, and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. It's what we call a flannel panel Friday today, and I don't think it's going to go well. So if you're fond of things that come to a crash and burn conclusion, this is probably the show for you. Hang around for 2 hours of us putting on flannel shirts or wearing flannel shirts and talking about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. A lot of cool stuff to talk about, but some of it not so cool, but important nonetheless, with our panel. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Sitting here with me in studio is the president of Catholic Answers, wearing a really fine-looking flannel shirt. It looks like he went to an Orange County Goodwill and got that thing. That's how good it looks.
This Hello, is Chris from Jack. This is from the great Ann Zendra. Gave this to me.
Ann gave you that?
Yeah. Yeah.
She's good.
By the
I'll
way, she
what,
sent
she's
us
good.
I don't even know what the art form is, but it involves very, very small dots or pegs or something.
Pointillism?
Something like, well.
Printing?
I think it's like a version of it, pointillism maybe, but more
Morse
moderate
code?
More moderate than Surratt. more modern. Newer. Of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Thank you, Anne. I never sent you a thank you note for that.
Oh, I want
to
see
we
that.
We have to hang. I think okay. Jordan is getting a frame.
Oh, yeah.
Can okay. I say there are people who like what you just described, who like watching train crashes and
yeah.
stuff.
Oh, yeah.
St. Augustine warns about this kind of thing in the.
Well, he
they
didn't.
Hit trains?
Oh, wait. We got to introduce Joe Heschmeyer. Joe Heschmeyer, apologist here at Catholic Answers. Who won the pool in there, by the way? No, I won the pool. No, I didn't say Joe. I didn't. We had a pool
Wait
on
a minute. Where's
which
this
of our guests would talk without being introduced today. And Chris was the winner, but Joe pulled it out. Joe
Heschmeyer, whoever gets introduced last, it always is.
Joe Heschmeyer, apologist here at Catholic Answers, author of a wonderful book for this year. I mean, for any year, but for this year in particular, The Eucharist is Really Jesus. You should get it. Hello, Joe Heschmeyer.
It's good to be here.
Hey, mute his yes. mic until he puts a flannel shirt on. What the heck?
No.
What is this?
I think
it's too hot. I have a flannel shirt here in the office. I'm not wearing
Hold it.
Hold
it up.
It's
I want to see that you have a flannel.
I have to go to the other room to
oh.
get it.
Okay. All right. No,
I'll
I
get
think,
it after the break.
I think it's more or less a flannel panel tradition that one of us doesn't wear a flannel shirt now. I think that's...
It's 90 degrees here, and the air conditioning is struggling to keep up. And
I've
so
had
flannel seems
every
like
show.
A...
Every show I've worn.
Bad idea.
All right.
Hey, can I ask for prayers for somebody? Sorry,
oh, yes,
real quick.
Please, Chris. Yeah,
our dear friend Kathleen in New Jersey, a good friend of Catholic Answers, and a dear friend of mine personally, a woman who's had a lot of suffering in her life, and it continues. And I spoke to her yesterday. I just ask all of our listeners, please offer your prayers or your sacrifices for our friend Kathleen in New Jersey, a rosary for her, make a visit to the Blessed Sacrament, whatever you think is your next communion on the Feast of Sacred Heart today, whatever. Please keep Kathleen in New Jersey in your prayer. She needs them.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Thanks. And I know many of our listeners will indeed keep Kathleen in their prayers. I had a lot of stories to choose from. What we do on Flannel Panel, as I said, is we wear flannel shirts, unless it's 90 degrees and the air conditioning is struggling. And we talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. But we're going to start with Catholic news this time. I could have gone with some amazing clips from National Public Radio, which we will get to. That's always a fun part of the program. National Public Radio as a new crusade, and God bless them, it is perfectly consistent with the fine work we've come to expect from National. But we'll get to that afterwards.
In a few years, you're going to be the only person listening to National Public Radio.
I only listen
just to
get
find the crazy
the show.
Stuff they're saying.
Yeah, nobody else is listening. I listen just to get stuff for the show, and they don't disappoint. I've never known them to disappoint. They come up with something. Remember the time they did a documentary on the pro-life movement and I played the audio for the two of you and the end of the yeah. introduction
Whatever
was?
You do, don't call it a baby.
And they called it pro-life. Like it was the worst thing ever. But all right. First, we're going to start with a document from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. It's usccb.org if you ever want to. And there's lots of very interesting and helpful stuff on the website.
The liturgical calendar is on there.
Yeah, that's where I always go for when I need yes. a liturgical calendar. And but it has. They have a new document out, and I have two computers in front of me here, but the title, I don't have enough memory in both computers combined for the title of this document. So Chris Check is now going to, he printed it out on paper.
I did.
This is the title of the new, May, it came out in May document from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Go ahead, Chris.
National Synthesis of the People of God in the United States of America for the interim stage of the 2021 to 2024 Synod.
Okay.
I mean, how could you not want to pick that up?
I know that's scintillating, isn't it? It's
like, I did read it. I read it.
Grab me two copies. I read it too. And
I did not read it.
That's no, but you did something even better. You had
I put it into ChatGPT and asked it to summarize for me.
And so. even the summary is a bit obtuse. So
it is.
So I have 4 years, Joe. Chris probably remembers this. I don't know if you know this about me, Joe. I have a bitterness in my heart towards church documents. I feel like producing church documents is one of the primary ways of not actually being the church, of giving ourselves busy work. I think the church produces almost 100% too many documents. Other than birth certificates and marriage certificates, most of the rest of it is useless. And so I come at this with a tremendous prejudice. But all that said, I did find a couple things that I thought were quite helpful in this document. So I, if I were to advise bishops, I would say stop it. Produce no more documents. It would be better for you to make some soup and go out in the street and give it to somebody than to produce another document. But and they do that. I'm not saying they don't do that. I'm saying do it one more time. The afternoon yes. that you had set aside for another document, just go, no, I'm going to do the soup again. That seemed to go well.
Go hear confessions.
Yeah, go hear confessions or whatever. And I'm not saying the bishops don't do that. They do all of that.
I think a lot of the documents are actually written by like bureaucrats at the USCCB. Yeah.
Right. Right, the staff
Which,
should
I'm
be
not
put
sure
on
that's
soup
better,
duty.
But yes.
No, right. And apparently, if you know how to write clear and concise sentences, you cannot work for the U.S. Catholic bishops. You are forbidden from working.
In my lifetime, some American bishops have written some good documents.
Give me an example.
Bishop Burbage.
Oh, I'm not talking
Bishop
about
Bishop Burbage of Arlington wrote a very good document on the whole transgender mess.
That was a beautiful document. Yep. Yeah, and
Bishop Olmstead famously has a document
on confirmation
on manhood.
For men.
Oh, for men. Oh, yeah. I thought his document on actually Bishop Olmstead must have written a few because his document on confirmation is one of the best things I've ever. All right, I stand corrected on that. I shouldn't say all these documents from Bishop.
I mean, from regions, committees, all that kind of stuff.
I mean, think about the word committee. It's got too many M's, too many T's, and too many E's.
Imagine if the three of us tried to write a document. How fun that would be.
That would not.
It's basically like listening to this show.
We can't even do the show.
Worse than the sub of its parts.
All right, so Joe, we'll start with you. Your response to the document that you did not read but asked ChatGPT to summarize for you. Any thoughts on this new document from the USCCB?
Everything. So I've kind of skimmed through parts of it, and it's a combination of kind of patting ourselves on the back in the midst of a huge crisis. So let's set the stage. For every two people that enter the church, 13 leave. That is appalling. It is the worst retention rate of any major denominational family, or like we're doing a bad job by any measure.
By the way, there's no mention of this of the contraction of the church in this document.
Oh. No, oh. In fact, it talks about how the world is listening to us and all this, which
really?
Seems kind of tone deaf.
Yeah.
It varied from. The little bits that I read, and then the summary, varied from being Pollyannish to being generic to being platitudinous, meaning...
Wow, those are the points that you wanted to touch on. Okay, go ahead. Yeah, meaning what?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem to grapple with the severity of the problem, and I realize that is a hard thing to grapple with. Nobody wants the kind of bad news part of the story, but I think you have to be honest about, there's a lot of things not going well, and so keep up the good work, lads, kind of point is not going to – that is the one thing we know is not the right way to go about it.
Yeah.
Second, the generic part where it's just like we should be more welcoming. We should be more clear. We should be more – those are things that are so vague. I don't know what to do to turn that into any kind of action item, which then leads to the third point, which is that it's – kind of just the platitudes that you could take this document, scratch out the word Catholic and put any denomination or probably any business.
Fortune 500
company.
That's an interesting point.
Right.
I
and just say like, we need to be better about messaging. We need to be more responsive to the consumer. And it's like, okay, I could have written this without consulting 35,000 people.
It's like back in the 80s when all the companies would talk about synergy. What we need to do is develop synergies. Okay, good. I hope that goes well. Don't know what that is, but I hope it goes well for you.
To Joe's point here, promote interculturality so that there is more unity. All right, so yeah, that could have gone into a document from the Ford Motor Corporation.
I'll tell you what, in my parish, if I were to translate that into English, say the parish that I go to, the Spanish-speaking people and the English-speaking people should find more ways to be one people together.
To hang out,
to do things together, to serve one another, all of that. We've had this thing where, like, the Spanish-speaking people, like, make breakfast for the English-speaking people when they're coming out of Mass. And then I think the English-speaking people might have done it, but I don't remember it. And I know I was not a part of it, so I apologize for that. But, I mean, it might have gone both ways.
It sounds like that is a form of collaboration.
Like one side really tried hard on that.
Yes.
No, it could be the other side did as well, and I missed it. But what I'm saying is, like, I kind of think that point is a good point. We need, like here in Southern California, we have great parishes.
Yeah.
But they have a Filipino community, a Cambodian community, a Vietnamese community, a Pacific Islander community, a Mexican community, a Guatemalan community. And even the Mexican communities are divided up into, oh, those people are from Chiapas and those people. So I think it's a good point, but it's so obtusely made. How is that supposed to help?
San Diego is the most culturally integrated diocese I've ever lived in my life.
It's beautiful.
Much more than the diocese in the Midwest. Let me share some more things.
If I forgot to mention Filipinos in my thing for San Diego, I apologize.
Underscoring Joe's point, the sort of the self-congratulatory language, our church does an exceptional job of reaching the world, and we should celebrate that. Is that true?
Well, in some ways, it is. Yeah, like if you go to Africa, many of the best hospitals will be Catholic hospitals.
Very
that's good.
Good.
I think that's good. But it's so poorly worded that, like, are we reaching the world in the way that, say, CBS television is? No, we are not. We are utterly failing.
Wait a minute. How about this? Is the church in America reaching the people of the United States? Because this is a document about the United States.
Right.
Is the church in America reaching the people of the United States with the gospel? Are they doing an exceptional job of that?
No.
No, they're not. No. Here's more. Just a second. The church is at its best. I prefer her best. But anyway, the church is at its best when it's warm, welcoming, and focuses on community building. Okay, this is nonsense. I'm for warm and welcoming and community. I'm for all of those things. But the church is at its best when it's focused on Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly...
Oh, no. Are we going to get the numbers now?
The word Jesus doesn't appear in this document.
Wait. This is perfect tease. Chris did a thing that's slightly unfair, but also brilliant. He counted the words in the document.
I had the help of a computer.
Yeah. He had the computer tell him how many times... And he gave all the good Catholic words, like sin, redemption, mercy...
Let me tell you.
Jesus. No, you can't tell me. Because this is a tease. We're doing a tease right now. Got to take a very quick break. We'll be right back with more on the... Wait a minute.
Give me that.
That's going to take us into the break. National Census of the People of God in the United States of America for the interim stage of the 2021 to 2024.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Check out EWTN's official YouTube channel.
Just follow the link on our homepage at EWTN.com or go to youtube.com/EWTN.
Watch EWTN's live shows or today's homily from the Daily Mass.
Click the upload button to see our most recent clips.
You can also find all of EWTN YouTube content by clicking the playlist button.
It's all on the official EWTN YouTube channel at youtube.com/EWTN.
Visit today.
'21 to 2024 Synod.
Okay, thank you for reading that through the break, Joe. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's the Flannel Panel. Chris Check here with us. Joe Heschmeyer here with us. I am Cy Kellett, your host. And every now and then we have fun just talking about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. And there's a new document out from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, which is like the synod wraps up this year in October. So this is the document, interim meaning it comes between the last meeting of the synod, which was October of last year, and the upcoming meeting, the final meeting, which is October of this year. So there's kind of an interim report, and they got 35,000 people to participate in this around the country. Again, I think we have said this before, not an outstanding number, but not a negligible number. You can get a pretty good sample if you get 35,000 people. So I don't want to quibble with that. But thus far, we have quibbled with the obtuse, churchy language.
Sort of bureaucratic language or corporate language or jargony.
Yeah, jargony. Churchish jargon.
Yeah.
Half corporate, half churches jargon.
Churchisms.
Yeah. So what we were going to do, what we teased before going to the break, was that Chris would read the some of his findings as far as how often certain words appear in this document.
I was a little unfair. The word Jesus does not appear in the document. That's true. The word Christ does.
Okay.
Okay. So
how many times is Christ?
12. 12.
12 times. 12 times. Okay.
Yeah. Sin appears twice. And in both occasions, it's a reference to institutional sins such as racism and sexual abuse.
Yeah, which we are against. But once again,
I would like to make clear.
I don't want anybody to think we're in favor of some of these sins.
Personal sins, actual sin, original sin.
Or the world's sin. Yeah. That the church is here to rescue the world from sin.
So how about this? Redemption, confession, hell, chastity, heaven, cross, worship. All those words?
Yeah.
Zero.
Wow.
Redemption, confession, hell, chastity, worship, heaven, cross. The word
I don't see the word salvation either.
Oh, I didn't even look that one up, but yeah, okay, very good. Mass appears one time, mass, and it's a reference to how the Latin mass is a point of contention.
Yeah.
Now here's some words that appear frequently: participation, mission, encounter, dialogue, LGBTQ, which I just want to say I stop doing this, episcopacy. This is not the language of the church.
Yeah.
Well, in fairness, one time it says LGBTQ, the other time it says LGBTQ plus.
Presbyterate, as it went on.
Leaving that open.
Presbyterate, episcopacy, seminary, professors, rectors. This is not ecclesial language. This is not the language of moral theology.
No, this is the language of identity.
Stop using it.
We don't do that.
Stop it. Stop. Okay, safe, pastoral, process, division. These words are preparing times. Synthesis, of course, appears 25 times. So, I mean, I think you can tell a lot about a document by the vocabulary that it uses.
And fails to use, yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to say, now I'm going to say something positive, because we had our fun at the expense of a bureaucratic document, which reads like a bureaucratic document. That bothers me that we cannot break ourselves of that habit as a church, but here we are. But that said, there's one point that is made more than any other point throughout this document, and that is what the laity are asking for is greater clarity. They feel like there is not clarity. I feel like that's ironic that you repeatedly say that the laity are asking for greater clarity while putting out an absolutely opaque document that no one can reasonably be expected to understand.
Yeah, the Region 11, which I believe is you all out in California and Nevada.
Is that us? I can't remember if we're Region 9 or 11. We're 11? All right, okay.
I think you might be confusing circuit courts with CCP regions.
I think I did. Yeah, that's right.
I didn't know there were regions.
Region 11, their report said, there was an overwhelming consensus on the need for our church to provide clarity in its messaging to the people of God and to foster opportunities that promote clear channels of communication. And, I mean, that is, again, on the one hand, something that almost any business could say. On the other hand, I think it's undeniably true in the church's case that we do need greater clarity, and people have complained about ambiguity and the like, and also having actual avenues of communication to voice their own confusion or frustration and the like.
And further on in the document, it gets more specific, and specific areas where people wanted greater clarity was they were two. One was liturgy, the other was the social teaching of the church, which I assume but do not know also includes the sexual morality of the church. I mean, because I think the people include that one under the other umbrella. And so give us clear guidelines on liturgy and – or maybe just give us clear liturgy. I don't know. And give us clarity on the social teaching of the church. That's what the people of God are asking for.
Yeah. So I guess there's a few things. One, I think this is very good, and I hope that they didn't need the Synod to tell them this was necessary. But if they did, well, I'm glad they got it. And maybe that speaks to that, the lack of voice. So in this sense, I mean, I've been a little harsh in kind of the read of it, because I think it is not an inspiring document, but I think it has good stuff in it. And I think it's probably good that there is this process where people can express themselves to representatives of the church in a way where they can get some direct feedback, because otherwise it is very hard. Now, in our own parish, we did a parish survey, not about the synodal process, but just about the health of the parish. It was like a, I want to say, 125-question survey. But two-thirds to three-quarters of the parish filled it out, and it gave a very clear, concrete sense of kind of where people were. Because the danger is if you just have a listening session, the people who go there are not necessarily a representative sample of the church.
No, right.
You know, there's a joke that if you do a survey for what percentage of you like filling out polls, it's going to be 100%.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, you talked about being self-congratulatory. One of the things that this document repeats several times is how enthusiastic people were for the synodal process.
Well, right, because it is self-selected.
That's a self-selecting sample. Right. If they're not enthusiastic, then you didn't hear from them. So that's a silly thing. They should have just seen
it. It is very close to the example of how do you like polls? And they're like, our people must love polls. Look at 100% of them.
100%,
said they fill them out.
But I do think it's like let me just put this way. I feel like part of why I feel kind of a visceral dislike for this document is that it seems to me the professional Catholic class puts itself between the Pope and the people in the sense that the Pope said, I want to hear from the people. And the professional class said, well, all right, we'll let the people know what they think. And there's this kind of professionalizing of the whole thing into these documents that just read like, there's no way you're not a professional Catholic. Like, no normal person wrote this. This is a person completely devoted to professional Catholicism. And I think if you ask most people, name the top 10 problems in the church, they would include the professional Catholic class. All these people who have set themselves up as the official, you know, whatever's running this committee or that school or that, and or hospital or whatever. So I feel like this is to criticize this document is not to criticize Pope Francis or the synodal process. It's to say the very problem that needs to be addressed is shown here. That nobody
will
listen to.
Well, then that is to criticize the process, Cy, isn't it? I mean, if the process has generated this document, can I offer one brief paragraph here that I think really does accuse this document.
Okay.
A related area of tension that came up frequently in listening sessions revolved around how many parts of the church, some of her long-established institutions, have become complacent, even ossified. In these instances, the church needs the courage to go out beyond methods and even structures that are frozen. As one diocesan report put it, Some are afraid of change and tired of doing new things. I'm not sure how that reconciles. They are content with doing things the way it has always been done before. When institutions and structures fall victim to complacency to the point of rigidity, they open the way for grave institutional sins such as sexual abuse and racism. Now, I don't understand how the one
leads to the other.
At all.
No,
I
think that makes two separate points. The first point is a brilliant and important point. The second point is an add-on.
Well, by the way,
that's there to tell you how to think about the
I'm
first one.
I'm not prepared to say it's a brilliant point.
I'm going to say this
is unsubstantiated. What is the evidence for this ossification?
At Notre Dame. Okay, so
that is not what they're referring to.
Are you sure that that's not what they're referring to? And by the way, I don't really believe that about Notre Dame. But
I don't get the Notre Dame reference.
That there, we have these ossified institutions that are still doing things that the way they were done in generations past, and they're not actually communicating the gospel. They're preparing, you know, people to go to business school or whatnot or get their MBA. But they're.
I'd love to know the person in Region 11.
All right, Chris and I are going to fight when we come back right after this. Catholic Answers Live Flannel Panel.
Why We're Catholic is the one book you can hand to anyone to invite them into or back to the Catholic faith. With more than 400,000 copies sold, Trent Horn's book has had a number one ranking on Amazon.com for 5 years running. Now available in softcover, bulk cases, ebook, and on Audible. Find out what the excitement is all about. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic at shop.catholic.com or visit whywearecatholic.com.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Are you scared to talk about abortion? Don't worry, almost everyone is. You can overcome this fear as Trent Horn shows in the newly revised and expanded second edition of Persuasive Pro-Life. With a little knowledge and a few proven techniques, you can become a bold and effective apologist for life. Visit shop.catholic.com to order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life and never again be afraid to speak up. Also available at good Catholic bookstores.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Flannel Panel, and getting a little heated in here. We're talking about the news of the day from
it's
a Catholic perspective.
It's the flannel. That's why Joe couldn't
Joe
wear
was smart
his.
Enough not to wear the flannel. Joe's like the moderate voice. You're the voice of reason today, Joe. And
I don't know why you say today.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Well, I think we take turns being the voice of reason, though. I actually, in my experience of the years of doing this with you guys, we take turns. But Chris and I have not taken a turn in a good while. It's been a good while since Chris or I took a turn. But Chris and I disagree about a paragraph in this document. By the way, we're talking about the new document from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, their interim kind of survey and synthesis document heading into the conclusion of the synod this October. And I do think, you know, some humility is in order as we approach the synod. And come, Holy Spirit, do your work. I hope that every kind of success comes from it. But that doesn't mean the process works, or even that people who are supposed to be helping the process are actually helping or might not be hindering it. So this new document, it's getting mixed reviews, mostly negative reviews from the three of us. But I kind of like this paragraph, and Chris doesn't. So I think we're reading it differently. Could you just start it again?
I think sure we are. So it talks about an area of tension that came up in the listening sessions that revolved around how many parts of the church, some of her long-established institutions, have become complacent, even ossified.
All right, can we stop right there?
Now,
that's
by the way,
true.
If your reading of this is correct, yeah. I totally agree with you.
And maybe my reading is naive, but when I heard that, I was like, Catholic hospitals, are they really Catholic? Catholic universities, are they really Catholic?
Parochial schools.
Catholic charities, is it really Catholic? Catholic schools. Now, the answer in some dioceses is yes. In more dioceses, the answer is no. I think that they have become ossified. I do. And I think that's a great critique. But
I would actually add to it. I saw a very interesting take once. I want to say in the comment section, a National Catholic Reporter, which is a doubly weird place to find
were
a
you
good.
Up?
I know.
Was there a baby but crying?
The person made the point, and they were making it with a much more critical. Their mentality behind it was probably not the same as my own, but they said, you know, the Jesuits are famously liberal these days, and Opus Dei is famously conservative, but in a deeper sense, organizationally, it's the opposite. Like, the Jesuits are way more traditional in the structure, way more clericalist, way more top-down hierarchical. And Opus Dei is much more about empowering the laity.
Wow.
And much more kind of spirit of Vatican II. And so, in a real way, this whole distinction about liberal, conservative, progressive, traditionalist, you have to really define what you mean by that.
Right.
Because it isn't like it matches up with left, right, or anything like this.
No.
Right. Well, if you think that Catholic universities should be what they were in the 1950s, I am not on board with you. They should not. If you think Catholic hospitals should be what they were, I am not on board with that.
I'm all about 1500s. I want leeches.
No, I'm just saying that
bleeding,
that the church needs to be more.
Humors.
What the world needs now is Catholic institutions that are robustly, determinedly about sharing Jesus with other people. And every one of them that's not doing that ought to just find something else to do. Perfectly fine with me if Catholic Charities wants to become a social service organization. That's fine. I don't mind. Just be, you know, charities in the Catholic tradition or something. Just don't be Catholic Charities anymore. Because Catholic in this world has to mean Jesus, or it's useless as far as I know. Maybe not useless. Useless is the wrong word. Or it's just not on mission. It's on a different mission.
So the quote that provides evidence for this charge comes from Region 11, which I guess is our region, the West Coast.
Yes, I looked it up.
Unless you're talking about the appellate
California
court.
And Nevada.
Yeah. So this is an excerpt from whatever document we submitted. The courage to go out beyond methods and even structures. The church needs the courage to go out beyond methods and even structures that are frozen. One man's ceiling is on a man's floor here.
Yeah, it could go
either
way.
When I read this, I'm hearing people objecting to an all male priesthood, right? Or the old boys club that is the episcopacy, or the way it goes on to say
right.
They are content with doing things the way it has always been done before. So now, that doesn't mean going back to the Land O'Lakes agreement with Notre Dame. That means going back to the.
But this is what I think, and I could be completely wrong about this. The people say one thing, and then the professional Catholics get a hold of it and write a document about it, and it means a different thing. That's my strong feeling about this.
We have no idea what this means.
If
it means, as you say, that parochial schools in the main are not Catholic schools,
yeah.
Totally agree. They're ossified and they need to go away.
But I just want to say this. You go to certain places, like Fargo, North Dakota, the Catholic schools are rock solid Catholic. They're on mission. They are places of evangelization. They are places for families. So I don't want to say that Catholic schools are bad. I don't want to do that. But there is, in general, an ossification of Catholic education. You go around this country. All three of us go around this country. You know it when you see it. The Catholic school, that what it really is a high-class community school.
There are dioceses where there is a genuine renewal of parochial and secondary education. Without question. And there are as Joe was saying in his Opus Dei example, there are efforts by the laity. I think of our friend Dale Alquist with the Chesterton Academy Schools, that network where he has like 70 or 80 of them in this country right now.
Right.
That is not ossified.
That is so the most mild-mannered person changing the world, too.
I think it runs up against the ossification.
Yes, it does.
Sure I see this as a left-right thing at all. Like, I don't. I think it has. If you're familiar with the running of a diocese or even a parish, there's a lot of, this is how we've done it as long as we've been around. And so you have to maintain a lot of buildings with a lot of air conditioning, and a lot of time, money, and energy is spent keeping up churches that maybe nobody's in. And if you look at the budget for that compared to the budget for something like new evangelization, anything, you're going to find a lot of money being spent on keeping the buildings together compared to reaching new people. And that is an inherent threat to the nimbleness that the document talks about the need for, of a church being responsive and able to kind of meet people. And I think something like even the fact that we're talking about this in parochial terms speaks to a certain mindset that as people are less localized, you know, you might go to work 30 miles from where you live, how the Catholic Church responds to that in a way to create authentic community that maybe isn't geographically tied to the boundaries you happen to be in.
Yeah.
Those are questions that are going to take a lot of creativity. And so I don't think of that as like a left-right sort of issue, but an issue of just like, how have we done things in the past versus how should we be doing things right now and going into the future?
If the authors of this document have given this particular question the consideration that my friend Joe Heschmeyer just has, I would be surprised to think that they had thought it through that deeply.
Well, you're using a high standard. This is Joe Heschmeyer you're talking about. So, look at that, Joe. I said something nice about you. Can you believe
thank
it?
Thank you. I appreciate that.
One of the themes it almost seemed to me like they had to put it in because they must have heard it so much is the church is too confusing. It's too confusing on liturgy. It's too confusing on its social teaching. And I mentioned those two already, but I want to mention the third way they thought the church is too confusing, which is welcome versus clarity. People see these as opposed to one another. That is, we want to welcome, you know, all of the euphemism today, sexual minorities or whatever. We want to welcome everybody. We really do. But we also want to be clear on the teaching of the church. And I think what they're saying is it's confusing. How are we supposed to do that?
The truth is welcoming. It's not. The truth is not welcoming.
Well, I mean, the truth can be expressed in ways that are not welcoming. I mean, when I was a child, I could tell the truth about one of my brothers to my mom, and she'd say, "Yeah, I know it's true. We should go away. You don't need to tell me that." You know, like there's a way that, yes. You as a child, you know how to use the truth to hurt other people.
Oh, sure. There's a whole segment of, I don't know what you want to call them. I'll just avoid labels. There are a whole segment of online Catholics right now who are very bad at telling the truth.
But they
tell the truth, but they're bad the way they
but
do
it. But they're mean about it.
Yeah, they're,
right.
Yeah, they're exactly.
mean about
right.
it.
Right.
Or
Paul
they,
wouldn't tell us to present the truth in love if presenting the truth was automatically loving.
Correct.
Again, with Heschmeyer.
Yeah.
See, this kills it. But I think you're right.
This is something Catholic Answers works very hard at.
And I have to say, Chris, now I'm going to say something nice about both of you. But you've had this experience, Joe. This is one thing Chris is very good at, about reminding us constantly about how not to speak. We don't speak in a way that is dismissive of other people, that's cruel, or judgmental, or
is simply just going to set up a more of the we they.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But right. okay, so
but can I add a couple things here?
Yeah,
I did a word cloud on this. You know, I put the text of the document into a word cloud generator.
Do we get a definition of what word cloud is?
So a word cloud visually creates the most frequent words used in a document.
So this isn't going to work. This is not going to work on the radio.
No, I can describe though the most. So it produces
Tune
also
into
a top
YouTube.
10 list. Of the most commonly used term. So, you know the word used most often?
In the document, what is it?
Synthesis.
In the document, church, followed by diocese, followed by bishop, followed by USCCB.
Wow, that's a pretty institutional, ossified document right there.
So I was reminded of the speech that then Cardinal Bergoglio gave that Jimmy Akin suggested was one of the reasons he was elected pope, in which then Cardinal Bergoglio said, when the church does not come out of herself to evangelize, she becomes self-referential and then gets sick. The evils that over time happen in ecclesial institutions have their roots in self-referentiality and a kind of theological narcissism.
Oh, my.
Wow. Well, you
and
yeah.
Yeah, I just think that that is the rich. Now,
yeah, but the document is self-referential,
defense,
is what you're saying.
It is an interim document describing what participants at a conference said. And
is
so
it, though?
However you write that is kind of going to be about, like, these participants said this, those participants said that.
Right.
So, like, the fifth most common term is participant.
Yep.
Yeah. Interestingly, actually, the 10th most common term, it actually ties with the word mission and the phrase United States, is tension.
Oh, tension. Yeah, that's a great point, Joe. That's a great point. So confusion was a theme, but I neglected tension. Tension is a theme throughout this, that there is a state of tension in the church.
Yeah, which I think anyone who's been Catholic for, you know, 3 or 4 minutes could point to.
Right.
But it's good to hear it kind of acknowledged. So although, again, I started off kind of critical and can continue to be kind of critical of the document, there's some real good in saying, like, yeah, there is this tension within the church, and things are not, you know, all good in the state
that
of Denmark.
Is good. Right. Because we have to take a break very soon, I do want to mention a couple of the things that I thought were very good in the document. I want to see what you both thought. It did say that there are three groups of people who feel excluded. One was what you said before, LGBTQ people, and I think we've addressed that enough. But the divorced feel excluded in the church, and the disabled feel excluded in the church. I do think that's unacceptable, that we have a church where people who are in any way, people who are divorced and people who are disabled, they just don't feel welcome. It says families with disabled children don't feel welcomed in the church. That's not acceptable. I'm so this whole thing, the whole synod would be worth it, in my view, if we became a church that actually welcomed disabled people.
Yeah,
I have a little bit of reservation about putting disabled people in the category of two. There's not a moral problem with being disabled, but divorce and the behaviors of people who suffer from same-sex attraction, those are moral questions. So if they're not feeling welcome, I'd like to know why. But if they're feeling unwelcome because the church is unwilling to say or is not going to say, your divorce is just okay. It's fine. Divorce is okay. The church can't say that, nor can she say unnatural sexual practices are okay. So if you need to hear those things to feel welcome, you're gonna feel unwelcome. So welcome here is a difficult word. If there are churches that are not accessible to people who have disabilities, or people are in the congregation are jerks because some kid maybe acts up a little bit or whatever the case is a little bit disruptive.
Yeah.
I mean, that is very problematic. But we're becoming antinatalist anyway. I mean, we just don't like it if regular children are disruptive in church.
Yeah, that's true. But I have seen parishes, actually right here in San Diego, one of them a magnificent Filipino parish where the pastor went out of his way to welcome every disabled person, spent time before and after Mass, welcoming families, and that included, I've seen, kids with Down syndrome just run up to this pastor and hug him. They know that he loves them. When you've seen that, you want that for the whole church. That's how the whole thing, and not just those disabilities, people who are schizophrenic, people who are... well, frankly, elderly. I mean, you get old enough, you're disabled, and I in defense of the document, Chris, I see what you're saying, and I totally agree. I think they were it was more or less a math thing. They summed up these are the three groups that we heard this the most about. But it's heartbreaking to think that there would be a Catholic church that doesn't welcome the disabled or in which disabled family, because it's really hard to have disabled children. And that is where we should be at our best. that's where we should be at our tippity top. All right, maybe let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Flannel Panel. We'll change direction. We'll do a different news story after this when we come back on Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul? And that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come. At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
He was a Jesuit, a cardinal, and a doctor of the church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Robert Bellarmine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, including helping to draft two important catechisms that defended church teachings during the Protestant Revolt. Pope Clement VIII named Bellarmine a cardinal because, as the Pope put it, Bellarmine had not his equal for learning.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Chris Check is one of our guests. Joe Heschmeyer is the other one of our guests. It's Flannel Panel today on Catholic Answers Live. And I'll give you guys a choice. You can vote on what you want to do for the next
story. I like polls.
I'll poll you.
100%.
We could talk about the Pope on 60 Minutes or the new president of Mexico. You pick.
I read the interview of the Pope on 60 Minutes, but I left it in my. Can we save that for hour two?
Okay. We'll do the Pope hour two. So, do you have a vote?
That works for me.
Go with what the boss said.
I left. Right. I just left my notes in the.
That's fair. Yeah. Okay. So when we come back, we'll talk about the Pope on 60 Minutes.
He said some good things.
Take that as a clip. Take a clip of that. Save that clip. We're gonna play that back. Chris Check. All right, so Mexico got a new president. Name one thing that's interesting about this new president in Mexico. Each of you.
She is a she. That's what I keep hearing about.
She is the protege of the existing left-wing president of Mexico. There's nothing has changed here.
Or López Obrador.
Obrador.
Yes, the whole entire world has changed because she is a woman. And that is the I'm sorry, but it seems to me patronizing how the news reports on a woman becoming the president of Mexico, patronizing both of Mexicans and women.
So, I also think she has a Jewish descent.
Yeah,
right?
She's Jewish.
She is.
Yeah.
No, she's secular. She's Jewish descent.
Oh, yeah. She's secular. Yeah. Okay.
Lithuanian. Like, her last name is Sheinbaum, which is not the normal. Like, if you were to say, what country is President-elect Sheinbaum from? I'm not sure a normal person would put Mexico in their top 20, unless they ran out of countries they could think of.
Or Lithuania, for that matter. Do you know how to tell if someone's from Lithuania, typically? Almost always?
No. Deep antipathy towards the Russians?
I feel like the Irish do this all the time. They elect people that don't have Irish names.
I-S.
Like,
wait,
that's because they can't pronounce the Irish names.
Like, why? Like, just are they ashamed of the Irish names? What do they get? Like, Eamon de Valera. Is de Valera Irish? I don't think that's Irish.
Portuguese? If a name ends in I-S, it's Lithuanian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like Stanless.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Almost always. I-C, almost always Serbian or Croatian.
You know who I think is Lithuanian, by the way? And this is probably what we most should talk about. I think Kristaps Porzingis, the center for the Boston Celtics, I could have the wrong country.
I thought you were going to say St. Faustina. I like to remind Poles that at the time she was Lithuania.
Oh, she was?
Not really.
Well, that's kind of mean to the Poles because people are always biting off pieces of Poland and then the Poles have to get it back two centuries later. And then, so it's kind of unfair to the Poles.
St. Boniface was not a German. He was from England.
Well, I'm aware of that.
Yeah, and St. Patrick. Also English.
Yeah, but she was in Vilnius. That was where her convent was, at least for part of the time.
Okay, so let's talk about the woman who became the president of Mexico. First of all, is it do either of you agree with me that there's too much of this? Oh my gosh, a lady got elected in Mexico, or is that important that we
that we obsess over that?
I think a number of countries have had female presidents at this point. I don't like the identity
Not Great Britain. Great Britain's never had a female president.
That's true. Yeah. Margaret Thatcher was not a president.
No, they've never had a president. So yeah. Moving on.
And you know what? When Italy got a lady prime minister who's a big G.K. Chesterton fan.
Chris and I are going to say lady for this whole segment, by the way, just to drive you crazy, Joe.
What's wrong with the word lady? I don't.
What's wrong with the
female
it's
woman?
Just old man way of
lady.
Talking.
Lady.
Joe is cringing every time we say.
Wait a minute. Lady is the opposite of is the gentleman and ladies, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, but Gloria Steinem doesn't like it, so you're not supposed to say.
Now I'm going to double down.
No.
When Italy.
You can't say stewardess anymore either. Did you know that, Joe?
I mean,
Joe
also
knows all.
there's a push against actress.
Actress?
Which,
she's an actor.
Yeah.
She's an actor.
Just saying actor in both cases. But
well, next thing
I
you know, we'll get rid of the word
successful.
Aviatrix if you do that.
Aviatrix.
Oh, my gosh. Aviatrix is a great word.
How will we know if we don't have the word aviatrix? Well, so if you get rid of
Italy
the word,
has a lady prime minister.
Ah, yeah, Giorgia Meloni. That's not an Irish. That's she's got an Irish name. She's the president, or she's the head of a
quite big G.K. Chesterton fan
and a Tolkien fan.
Yeah,
a Tolkien fan. She used to dress up as a hobbit.
How come there wasn't a giant news story about her?
There were plenty of news stories.
Oh,
about
there
her
were, but it was all
lady.
About her being a fascist. Like, yeah. Okay, let me just ask you that. Do you notice any difference? In the way American media covers the election of women as leaders of countries, if the women are right-wing or left-wing?
Oh, you notice, of course.
Really?
I mean,
do you notice a preference for left-wing women?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the mere fact that I saw a ton of headlines announcing Mexico had a female president, I knew right away she wasn't going to be some right-wing, you know, Bolsonaro or Trump or something like that.
Or Malay.
Yeah, like they would not Argentina, be... Yeah. Putting out the trumpets and announcing this glorious day.
No.
She wasn't going to be the Iron Lady. It was clearly going to be someone who agreed with the politics of the 20-something reporter at the New York Times who covers the story.
Okay, let me ask you this. Do you two share my impression, or am I just being overly sensitive, that whenever a woman is elected to a country outside the United States, the American media is chiding us as Americans for failing to do this for our entire 250-year history.
I can go one further. When it seemed all but certain to the mainstream media that Hillary Clinton was going to become president, Malcolm Gladwell, in his Revisionist History podcast, had an entire episode about how after, I don't even remember what group it was, elected a female president, there was like 150 years before they had another one. And so we were already being chided for not having two female presidents before we even had one.
That happened with Catholics on the Supreme Court, by the way. Roger Taney.
Oh, yeah, Roger Taney.
And then they just didn't do it again for another century.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were like, okay, I don't know about the Catholics. That's enough of that.
Yeah, after Dred Scott, it's like, no, we've taken our chance.
Thanks, Roger.
You know, I
know.
It.
What a noble legacy for Catholics.
Sheesh.
Our first Catholic Supreme Court justice gave us the Dred Scott decision.
In the main, Catholics on the Supreme Court have been a disappointment.
Right? Have they?
In the main?
I don't know enough of them to know. I mean—
They're a majority right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are they?
But they were also a majority 20 years ago.
I mean, Catholics?
I think for a long time, Catholics have been overrepresented anyway their demography.
Well,
on the court,
America needs.
Sotomayor is a Catholic, right?
Yes. Okay. Well, all right. Here we go. We're going to do this for the benefit of the entire earth. Everyone listening around the world, we will now name all the Catholic justices on the Supreme Court.
Ever?
Right now.
Ever?
Justice Sotomayor, Justice Alito.
Justice Thomas.
That's Justin three.
Roberts.
Yeah. Roberts is a Catholic?
Yes.
I thought he was Anglican. Oh, he's Catholic?
No, he's
Kavanaugh.
Catholic.
Yeah.
No,
right.
My wife used to be the nanny for their kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But Kavanaugh, is he Catholic?
Yeah.
So that's five out of nine.
I think he goes to Episcopalian church.
He went to Georgetown Prep.
I don't believe in Catholic triumphalism and all that, but we win. We win. We got five on the Supreme Court. I'm sorry. We win.
Actually, I
just want the world to know we win. Go ahead.
No, I actually don't think. I don't think the voting record of the Supreme Court
shows that we win.
Is a victory.
See what you're saying.
The New Yorker magazine had an article in 2022 that said the sins of the High Court Supreme Catholics. And the byline is, the overturn of Roe v. Wade is part of the ultra-conservatives' long history of rejecting Galileo, Darwin, and Americanism. It is not even a dog whistle, just
That's just blatant anti-Catholicism. Like, we don't even care about the truth. What the heck with it? This is a good opportunity to hate the Catholics. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to talk about the Pope on 60 Minutes when we come back, and then we're going to talk about National Public Radio and their latest moral campaign to improve the living of everyone by damaging the family. Right back with more Flannel Panel, Catholic Answers Live.